Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We're reading a nice verse this morning, text 23 from chapter 3 of Canto 1. This is a very brief description of Krishna and Balaram. The verse reads, in the 19th and 20th incarnations, the Lord advented himself as Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna in the family of Vrishni, the Yadu dynasty, and by so doing he removed the burden of the world. Bhagavan Harad Bharam. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The specific mention of the word Bhagavan in this context indicates that Balaram and Krishna are the original form of the Lord. This will be further explained later. Listen to this sentence. Lord Krishna is not an incarnation of the Purusha as we learn from the beginning of this chapter. What? He is directly the original personality of Godhead, and Balaram is the first plenary manifestation of the Lord. From Baladev, the first phalanx of plenary expansions, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, and Pradyumna, expands. Lord Krishna is Vasudev, and Balaram is Sankarshan. Very clear, right? Let's take a look at what Prabhupada is saying here. Earlier, in the beginning of this chapter, we learned that there are the Purusha avatars, and from the Purusha avatars come various expansions of the Purusha avatars. And in that list, we just read that number 19 and number 20 are Krishna and Balaram. And Prabhupada is saying, Lord Krishna is not an incarnation of the Purusha, as we learned from the beginning of this chapter. Contradiction, right? Yes, our college brains are moving here. That is a contradiction. So, let's go back to the beginning of the chapter. Before the beginning of the chapter, there are six questions asked by the sages. One of the questions is, please describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, which he created. So this morning's class is a little exercise on not just brain teasers, but how to address either your own doubt or another's doubt why we hold Krishna in a specific regard. That's what the mission of this morning's class is. So three different scriptural reference sources to sort this out. One is the beginning of the chapter. One of the categories of avatars is explained. Purusha avatars is one of the six categories of avatars. So, Sutta explains them. Mahavishnu, or sometimes also called, it's like, you know, it's equivalent. Karana Dakshayi Vishnu equals Mahavishnu. Same, different terminology for the same manifestation. And Karpa Dakshayi Vishnu and Shira Dakshayi Vishnu. So, I'm going to point out to you another apparent contradiction, so listen carefully. Text number 5 of this chapter says, this form, the second manifestation of the Purusha, is the source of and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations within the universe. From the particles and portions of this form, different living entities like demigods, men, and others are created as the bodies, not the souls. So, this is what in text 23, what Prabhupada is referring to. Earlier in this chapter, it is said, that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. And we hear people who know that's a statement. It's not only in beginning of chapter 3 of the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, it's stated elsewhere, Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana in particular, and other places. Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu. And so that's the, from those scriptural sources, they worship Krishna. They're fine with worshiping Krishna as an avatar of Vishnu. And who is Vishnu? He's a Purusha avatar of the Supreme Lord. Okay, who's the Supreme Lord? Commonly, Narayana is the Supreme Lord. The Vishnu forms are Purusha avatars, and Krishna is one of the Leela avatars, expanded from the Vishnu forms, or expansions of the Narayan form. And so Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is a manifestation of Narayan. Common understanding. Scripturally based. Confirmed here in the beginning of the third chapter of the Bhagavatam. So, why do you Hare Krishna guys say that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead? When it's very clear, Krishna is an expansion of Vishnu. That's fine. They're equal, but one is original. The other is the expansion. That's one reference. Here's another, also taken from Padma Purana. This is, I'm going to be reading from the introduction, because it's a summary of what's in Chapter 5 of Adi Leela, so you can look it up later. Chapter 5 of Adi Leela is titled The Glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. And what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is doing is he's making references from the Puranas that describe the original personality of Godhead and the expansions of the original personality of Godhead. So listen carefully. Short paragraph. Beyond the limitation of this material world is the spiritual sky Paravyom, which has many spiritual planets, the supreme of which is called Krishnaloka. Krishnaloka, the abode of Krishna, has three divisions, which are known as Dvaraka, Mathura, and Gokula. In that abode, the personality of Godhead expands himself into four plenary portions. Krishna, Balaram, Pradyumna, the transcendental Cupid, that one, and Aniruddha, they are known as the original quadruple forms. Paragraph. In Krishna Loka is a transcendental place known as Shweta Dweep or Vrindavan. So now we have three different nomenclatures all referring to the same thing. Krishna Loka, Shweta Dweep, or Vrindavan. There's another Shweta Dweep. That's the white island in which Mahavishnu, upon which Mahavishnu is reclining in the ocean of milk. But it's also, there's a Shweta Dweep in Krishna Loka and Vrindavan. Below Krishna Loka, in the spiritual sky, are the Vaikuntha planets. On each Vaikuntha planet, a four-handed Narayana expands from the first quadruple manifestation. The personality of Godhead known as Sri Balaram in Krishna Loka is the original Sankarshan, parentheses, attracting deity, and from this Sankarshan expands another Sankarshan called Maha Sankarshan, who resides in one of the Vaikuntha planets. By his internal potency, Mahasankarshan maintains the transcendental existence of all the planets in the spiritual sky, where all the liberated beings are eternally liberated. The influence of the material energy is conspicuous there by its absence on those planets. The second quadruple manifestation is present. In the next paragraph is describing outside the Vaikuntha region is the Brahmajyoti, and beyond, on the other side of the Brahmajyoti, there is the causal ocean. It's the language. On the other side of Brahmaloka or the Brahmajyoti is the spiritual Karuna Samudra or causal ocean. The material energy exists on the other side of the causal ocean without touching it. So there's something in between, that's the river Viraja. So we'll go, there's scriptural references for each of these, but we'll go through the Krishna Loka. Krishna expands as Balaram. He's the original Sankarshan. Balaram then expands as Pradyumna and Aniruddha, because Krishna is there, Vasudev, he's the original Vasudev. Balaram is the original Sankarshan, who then expands Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Pradyumna, the transcendental Cupid, not the other guy. There's a demigod that does the same program, but it's not this, it's not the original Pradyumna. And Aniruddha. So from that first or original Sankarshan expands Narayana, and from that Narayana, the second Sankarshan, called Mahasankarshan, who then expands as Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Or rather, Narayana is that other Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. From the second Sankarshan expands the Purusha avatars. So now that's what we just read. That's where it fits in. From Narayana, the second Sankarshan is expanded. From that second Sankarshan, or Mahasankarshan, comes the Purusha avatars. And from the Purusha avatars, there are forms of the Lord that are in the Vaikuntha realm, in the Parivyom, and they make their appearance in this world through the agency of the Purusha avatars, because that's their function. We'll say it the other way around. Those forms of the Lord, the avatars that appear in this world, have their eternal existence in the spiritual world, but for the purpose of Leela, in the case of the Leela avatars, or in the case of maintaining the Guna avatars, they appear, that at least Vishnu appears in this realm. So there's beyond this realm and there's in this realm, and the avatars are from beyond this realm but appear within this realm. And they appear through the agency of the Vishnu forms. So they can be properly called incarnations of Vishnu, as the Bhagavatam has just done. 19 and 20 of the incarnations of Vishnu, Krishna and Balaram. But Prabhupada is noting that in the verse, the term is used Bhagavan, which is a flag or a hint or a signal that this is the original personality of Godhead, because the other forms are identified as Kala or Ashesha Ashesha, a portion of a plenary portion. Then in the purport, Prabhupada states, the verse that we just read, later on this will be explained. Well, the later on explanation is, after the list of incarnations is completed, following Krishna and Balaram, mention is made of Lord Buddha, who is yet to come. Mention is also made of Kalki, who is yet to come. Then Sutta says, there are so many. The forms of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. So this is not an exhaustive list, in other words. And then he mentions the Manus, that's another category, Manvantar avatars. Then he goes back, this important verse, text 28 of chapter 3, where Sutta says, out of this list of incarnations, one amongst them is the source of all of them. He's already said Vishnu, they're avatars of Vishnu, but Vishnu is also a category of avatars, a Purusha avatar. Out of all of this list, so far in chapter 3, one amongst all of them is the source of all of them. And that's Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, hinted at by the use of the word Bhagavan in the verse. Here's the verse. Ramakrishna iti bhuvo Bhagavan aharad bharam. Aharad bharam. Remove the burden. Bhagavan aharad bharam. Krishna personally appears to remove the burden of the earth. That's what happened. Mother Earth assumed the form of a cow and appealed to the demigods. The demigods went to Brahma. Brahma said, let's go to the ocean of milk. They offered their Purusha Sukta prayers. The Lord said, I will appear to remove the burden of the earth. And he did. So Krishna appeared in this world as an avatar of Vishnu. He also appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He also appeared as the foster child of Yasoda and Nanda. But he's the original personality of Godhead. Three different ways in which he appears: avatar of Vishnu, son of Vasudeva and Devaki, son of Nanda and Yasoda. That's his liberty to appear however he likes. But he's the original personality of Godhead. So what's the relationship of Narayana and Krishna? The description given in Chaitanya Charitamrita with ample scriptural reference is Narayana is an expansion of the original Sankarshan, Lord Balaram, who is an expansion of Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. And Krishna, from time to time, he personally appears as in this world, which he arranges for the creation of through the Purusha avatars. Just a couple more things, see if there's some discussion on this. In one sense, it's academic, meaning, like, who cares? Or it's a fine point that's not so critical. What's critical is that one worships the personality of Godhead. And these are all in the same category, Vishnu Tattva category. And so one who worships Narayan, one who worships Vishnu, one who worships Krishna, one who worships Nrisimha, one who worships these forms of the same category, they're Vaishnavas. And so that's what's important. And the rest is one can say, a detail. And details are also important. But what's more important is worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We worship Krishna with exclusive focus, or not primary focus, because of the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam and because we're following the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that appreciates the Bhagavat Purana in comparison to the Sattvic Puranas. The Bhagavat Purana is considered Amala Purana. What does that mean? It means in the qualities of goodness, we know from Bhagavad Gita, there's a mixture of the influence of passion and ignorance. But Shuddha Sattva or Amala Sattva is where there's no mixture. And therefore, the Puranas themselves refer to the Bhagavatam as the emperor or the supreme authority who they look to. And so we look to the Bhagavatam in that way. And so the statements that are found in the Sattvic Puranas that describe Narayan as the Supreme, we respect that. Krishna is the source of Narayan. And Narayan regards Krishna even in that way. Like there's a description in the, towards the very end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, where in Dwaraka, one Brahmin had sons that died shortly after they were born. Not died exactly, they just vanished. Poof, they're gone. And it happened time and time again. And he started making some Brahminical noise that said, what kind of king is Ugrasena? That in his kingdom, here is a Brahmana properly following the practices of Brahminical culture, and he has no protection from the king. His sons just disappear. What kind of king is Ugrasena? So, started going around, and I'll make it short. Arjuna was visiting in Dwarka after the birth of one of those sons that just disappeared. And he heard the rah 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 stuff, so he went to the Brahmin and said, "My dear Brahmin, never fear, Arjuna is here. I'll take care of this situation. I'll protect you. Your when your wife is ready with her next pregnancy to deliver a child, you call me, and mighty armed Arjuna will take care. No one can do anything." So that's what happened, and Arjuna came, and with arrows he made a fortress that was impenetrable, even by mystic power. What to speak of somebody, you know, couldn't get anywhere near the Brahmana and his wife. And sure enough, after the 9th or 10th son also disappeared, the Brahmana, you know, just laughed at Arjuna. Big hero. You're in the same camp as Ugrasena. What's the use of you? And Arjuna, he took a vow. If I cannot protect your son, then I will take my life. So he searched everywhere, high, low, throughout the universe, couldn't find the sons, was ready to give up his life. Fire was set. He's, you know, ready to enter in the fire, and Krishna stops him. No. I know where the sons are. Let's go get them. So got his chariot, and they went to the abode of Mahavishnu. Through the layers of the universe, a very fascinating description in the Bhagavatam of what the layers of the universe are like. And there's a somewhat different description in Brihat Bhagavatamrita when Gopakumar passes through the layers of the universe. It's a very mystical description. In any case, they went to the abode of Vishnu, because the abode of Mahavishnu is, he's the source of the universe, so he's on the other side of the universe. That's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is within the universe, and Mahavishnu is beyond the universe. He generates them. And then they float on the Karana Sindhu, the Karana Ocean. So when they went to the abode of Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu was very happy. He said, "Alas, alas, I now have your darshan. I am the one who took the sons of the Brahmana. That's why the arrows of Arjuna could not stop, because I'm invincible. Although Arjuna's arrows are empowered, where does he get that power from? So I withdrew that power, and so I can get your darshan here, the sons of the Brahmana. Thank you very much for coming and giving your darshan." So the Brahmana's sons were taken back to the Brahmana in Dwarka. And Arjuna didn't have to kill himself. But even Mahavishnu wants the darshan of Krishna so he can offer his worship and respect unto him. And one other narration found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I won't go into the detail of it, but in Srirangam, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying at the home of Venkata Bhatta, they had some discussion about Lakshmi wishing to have entrance into rasa dance when she heard of Krishna's rasa dance. So she's in Vaikuntha, and she's hearing about Krishna's rasa dance. So she descended and wanted to enter into the rasa dance. She underwent austerities for a long, long time in order to enter into the rasa dance, and she wasn't allowed into the rasa dance. So Venkata Bhatta said, "There's no infidelity on her part. Krishna and Narayan are the same. She's perfectly chaste. It's the same entity. There's nothing. There's no wrong, no harm. But if no difference, but then why she can't enter the rasa dance? Same entity. Why she can't enter into the rasa dance?" Venkata Bhatta said, "I don't know. I'm sure you know. Please tell." Because the mood of love in Vrindavan is so elevated that it's not even a matter of purity, like the goddess of fortune. It's not a question of she's not qualified due to impurity, but there's a certain, in addition to purity, there's a certain mood of intimacy, of love, in the realm of Vrindavan. And thus, the realm of Vrindavan is in a even more confidential or elevated position, as is Krishna in relation to Narayan, or as we find in Rupa Goswami's writings in Nectar Devotion. Of the 64 qualities of Krishna, Narayan possesses 60, but there are 4 that Narayan doesn't possess. And that has to do with the intimacy of Krishna and Vrindavan. So, of all the forms of the Lord, Krishna is the original. That's our Gaudiya Vaishnava position, resting upon the authority of Scripture. So we give special attention to Krishna. But we shouldn't go back. We shouldn't make the mistake of saying, you know, poo-poo on Vishnu or or Narayan or something, like they're second class. That would be very offensive. One should not do that. Amongst them all, Krishna is in this position of the original. We'll go back one more step. However, those who are Vaishnavas, they're in the same category, and therefore most revered by, you know, amongst Vaishnavas and by Vaishnavas. One other detail is, you asked a question yesterday about the forms of Pradyumna, Sankarshan, and Aniruddha being, is it somewhere mentioned that they are the weapons of Vishnu? And the answer is yes. I researched that, and it's found in Padma Puranam. The other reference is from Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami, where he refers to Vishnu Dhamarotara, where Krishna is Vasudev, Balaram is Sankarshan, and so on, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Or with Ram also. Ram is Vasudev, Lakshman is Sankarshan, and Bharatam Shatrughna. It's also described in Padma Purana, they are the symbols of Vishnu, and Ram is Vasudev. Both references are there. So there are these different mentions, just like this one of what are the brothers of Ram, or what's the position of Narayan, Vishnu, and Krishna, and Balaram. So, as I mentioned yesterday morning, this is graduate study stuff. There's the undergraduate study that says we should worship one Supreme God. And the graduate level is, how do we understand the distinctions between those who are worshippers of one Supreme God, although the name or the form may appear to be different? How do we understand that? The undergraduate is, there's one Supreme. So, like in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes that the teachings of Christ are Vaishnava. There's one Supreme God. And it's not Vaishnava in the same sense as the name and the form match what's described in the Vedas or the Vedic literature. but God is a person. That's very clear. And one should worship the Supreme Person. That's very clear. So, within the broader category of Vaishnavas or Vaishnavism, there are distinctions. So the graduate study is, what are those distinctions? How do we sort them out? But respect should go to each, provided they're properly following. And if they're not properly following, that was the issue that Prabhupada had with persons calling themselves Christian, is they weren't following. In one lecture, Prabhupada was describing some encounter that he had in Sweden. He was somewhere else after being visiting in Sweden. He was describing, I had a program in Sweden, and one person came up afterwards and said, Swamiji, I liked your presentation very much, and I just want you to know I have very similar convictions. I'm a Christian. And Prabhupada said, you are not a Christian. He said, he repeated, I never met the person before, but bluntly I said, you are not a Christian. And he was very surprised, shocked. And he said, why do you say like that? I'm not a Christian. Prabhupada said, I will demonstrate. In your beliefs as a Christian, you should follow the teachings of Christ, is it not? Yes. One should follow the teachings of Christ. That's what a Christian does. And is it not part of Christ's teaching that thou shalt not kill? Yes, that's one of his teachings. Therefore I say you are not Christian. What do you mean? I don't kill. Are you eating meat? Yes. Then I say you are not Christian. Just, you know, blunt. Now it's not like Prabhupada went around doing that all the time with everybody. It was just a particular circumstance. But so it's important for us also. We have certain principles to live by, and we should live by those principles. A follower of the Supreme Lord should abide by certain principles of living. And there's a gradual progression to come to the stage where we can properly follow those principles consistently. And that's the path of practice and the path of sadhana, the cultivation of our original Krishna consciousness, original shelter in the personality of Godhead. So back to the graduate level stuff, because that's what's in the verse and purport. It's correct to say Krishna, it's right there, Krishna is, text 23, Krishna is the 7th, and Balarama, the 19th and 20th incarnation of Vishnu. Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. However, a higher understanding is also correct. Krishna is the original source. As he appears as an avatar of Vishnu, he appears as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He appears as the son of Nanda and Yasoda. He is the source of Vasudeva and Devaki and Nanda and Yasoda and Lord Vishnu. He's nobody's son. He's nobody's incarnation. He's the source of all incarnations. That's also correct. There's a final statement. There's a section in the same chapter, chapter 5 of Adi Lila, where Krishna Das Kaviraj deliberately presents other statements that seem contradictory. Some say Krishna is an avatar of Vamana, because in the line of incarnations he came after Vamana. It's described by Gargamuni in the name-giving ceremony, who Krishna was previously. Or Krishna explains it to Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house. He explicitly says, previously I was Bhavana. And he gives other examples. It's, scripture says this, scripture says that. And he concludes, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami concludes by saying, they're all right. Because everything is possible within Krishna. And provided they're scripturally based statements, it's not that this cancels out that and that cancels out the next thing, because they can't simultaneously be so, just like we just read. We read Lord Krishna is not an incarnation of the Purusha, as we learned from the beginning of this chapter. He is directly the original personality of Godhead, and Balaram is his first plenary manifestation of the Lord. So Krishna Das Kaviraj concludes by saying, discussing these topics makes the mind stronger. One should not avoid such topics. Because some people, I've had this discussion before, and some people say, my head's spinning. Do I really have to sort all that head spinning stuff out? And the answer is no. Just worship Krishna, that's fine. But if there is some doubt, should I be worshipping Krishna or something? The explanation is there. Does one require all this detailed knowledge? No. You don't have to go on to the graduate study. But the principle of unobstructed shelter should be there. Sam shayam samagram mam ita gyasasi tachtrino. Like that verse from 7.1 Bhagavad Gita. If there's doubt, there's a way of addressing the doubt and clearing the doubt. We worship Krishna, and the scriptural authority is in this section we just have been covering. Any questions? Yes?
Time is one of the energies of Krishna in material world. So in the spiritual world, he switches off that energy, so that still the activities are going on in the spiritual world. So is there a like transcendental time?
Yes.
So how does that work with the two? How do the two clocks blur in accordance?
One is very regulated and the other is very spontaneous. Krishna can move time at will. Narada, it's described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Narada once, he describes to Gopakumar and others, he once visited Krishna in Dwaraka and he was astonished at what he saw, not only the opulence and the 16,000 palaces, but as he went from palace to palace, it was different times. Sometimes it was night, sometimes it was the afternoon, sometimes it was morning, according to Krishna's desire. Spontaneous. Just to accommodate Krishna's desire. Sometimes he was sending his children to school, sometimes he was sitting in the assembly, but it wasn't like, you know, following any particular chronology. It was whatever was Krishna's mood of being with his devotees. Completely spontaneous. And time, in this realm, is very regulated. It destroys things. It brings things into being also. Without time energy, you can't have activity. But when you have activity, you also have destruction, because you have time. Yes?
Is there a description in Gopakumar's experiences like how Krishna is the supreme in terms of the highest experience?
Yes. Yes. It's the whole part two of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's not, you know, in a concise little dialogue fashion. Each of the places he goes, he finds himself not satisfied. and why that dissatisfaction is there is described. Something, it's not exactly dissatisfaction, something is lacking. Even in Vaikuntha. So it's there. But it's in a very, it's not in a rigid, compartmentalized, you know, technology type of presentation. It's very spontaneous in the presentation. Very sweet.
Another kind of dissatisfaction that he feels, is it the exchanges with Krishna?
Yes. Yes. He tries to have that experience because it's his nature. So he's a gopa, he's a cowherd boy. So being in the mood of a cowherd boy in Vrindavan doesn't fit the mood. The residents of Vrindavan would tell him, you have to change this dress. You know, your flute and your dhoti and your turban, and you know, should be more formal. But the mood was different. Not only the dress, but all, how, you know, the whole mood of regard for Narayan. It's just his mood didn't fit. Although he felt great love and affection from Narayan towards him, it was not the same. It wasn't his Madan Gopal. Anything else? Yes?
You were saying that Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amara Purana. If there are any discrepancies between Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas, we take Srimad Bhagavatam as
yeah,
the
correct.
But does it mean that, doesn't it mean that the other Puranas are wrong? Because I'm not.
No, it's not right wrong. Like saying Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not, you know, they get an F. It's wrong. Like this, you know, Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu. Not wrong. But we understand that statement in the perspective of the Bhagavatam. And then in turn, those Vaishnavas who worship Narayan, we respect their worship, their process and their mood of devotion. We don't say they're wrong or feel, hey, you guys are wrong. You appreciate in the context of the just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent his time at Venkatabhata's home, and they were relishing Krishna Katha together. With not saying, you know, this is right and that's wrong. There's another example of that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the devotees are observing Rath Yatra and Jagannath is appearing, and one of the devotees who was a Vaikuntha mood Vaishnav says, just see the opulence of my Lord. And then another says, the opulence of his Lord is greater than the opulence of yours, Krishna and Vrindavan. then that second devotee says, here is the opulence of my Krishna in Vrindavan. He describes the opulence of his Krishna in Vrindavan. He said, as far as I am concerned, the simple beauty of Vrindavan far surpasses the opulence of that same Lord in Dwarka. They all laugh. There's different modes. That's fine.
All this Purana is translated by the same person, Vyasadeva?
They were written, I know you transliterated, they were written by Vyasadeva, yeah. Yeah. Anything else? Yes. Well, the Sri Vaishnavas understand Narayan is the Supreme. From Narayan, various forms of the Lord manifest as avatars of the Purusha avatars. Same understanding as ours, and one of them is Rama, they worship Rama, they worship Nrisimha. There's less prominent. The mood fits. With Ram, there's very strong teaching or exhibition through his lila of virtue. And that's a very important part of Sri Vaishnavism. From the teachings of Ramanujacharya, the strict following, and as so, then the rest of the Sri Vaishnavas, the strict following of vittis of sadhana bhakti is, you know, characteristic of Sri Vaishnavas, and Ram was such a strict follower, and his lila is filled with that. So it resonates. Vaman is a little, hasn't the same resonance. He cheated Bali. And Nrisimhadev, you know, killed Hiranyakashipu, but you know, they're not so much teaching or lila of it, so it just resonates very nicely. Strong. But lots of Sri Vaishnavas are worshippers of Nrisimhadev also. Just particularly prominent is Ram. I'm listening. What's your question?
Why isn't Krishna
He's appreciating Ram's name and he's glorifying Ram's name. What's the harm? It's not that when you're speaking and someone quotes you, that every time, at every moment, you're saying everything. It's not a requirement. He was appreciating Ram's name. And other quotes can be there of his appreciating something else and appreciating something else, and it's fine. Unless you're, you know, a Vrindavan resident where there's nothing but Krishna. And then everything is in relation to Krishna. But outside of that mood of Vrindavan, multiple appreciations is just like we've been discussing earlier. And it's fine, it's not like wrong or that's got to be right, so the other has to be wrong. There's different moods of relishing the personality of Godhead and one's relationship with Him. Different moods of that. Yes. Yes.
Can you help us see the common, like one common point that I can take away from the different?
I'm not sure what you're asking. In looking at both Ramchandra and Krishna and Balaram, what's one comment said you can take away? Is that what you're asking?
I mean, like, we've heard incarnations of the Lord, so I was wondering...
Well, one prominent thing is what we just have been discussing today, that out of all, one is the origin of all the others. That was a key point. And on that basis, we worship Krishna. Whatever is, it's like the nectar of devotion, whatever is there in Krishna, excuse me, the other way around, whatever is found in any of the other incarnations is there within Krishna plus worship Krishna. And within Krishna is everything. And so worshipping Ram, worshipping Nrisimha, worshipping Vishnu, worshipping Narayan is included. And therefore, equal respect goes to one who's worshipped Narayan, worship Ram. One who's worshipping, we worship Nrisimha. It's a particular aspect, and with that which is within Nrisimha is within Krishna, as well within Lord Chaitanya. Like the Vibhabari Shesha song that's sung in Vrindavan at Mangalarti time. It's a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur with names of the Supreme Lord, but with names of the Supreme Lord, although it's sung in Vrindavan, and a lot of names of Krishna, there's a lot of names of other than Krishna. Names of other forms of the Lord. All of which are within Krishna. That's something to take away. By worshipping Krishna, we have all of our bases covered. We just need to worship Krishna. Something to take away. Yes? How can we be
intimate and respectful at the same time?
By respect. It's respectful. My answer is by respect. Respect doesn't mean. Respect protects us from transgressions. It protects us from fault finding or what's the phrase? Contempt. So respect means some distance. It's like deity worship. One devotee that's being trained in deity worship in Chicago was sharing this with me. We're standing in the temple room floor and looking up at the deity, and she was saying, before I was down here looking up at the deity, and that was easy. Now I'm standing right before the deity, and I'm thinking, I better be careful. There's intimacy, so the protection is respect. So it's intimacy plus respect. One doesn't lose everything by familiarity, handling the deity, so on and so on and so on. But it takes a qualified person to have that intimacy. Same with our association amongst the Vaishnavas. if we lose respect, we lose everything. Forget intimacy. it's everything is lost. And when sufficient purification comes, then spontaneous, beyond the regulations of distance, a la respect, where one can climb on Krishna's shoulders. One of my godbrothers used to like to say this. Kirti Dev used to say, "What kind of big boy are you? Who is this Krishna? I'll defeat him. Watch." And in the mood of intimacy, Krishna would be defeated. But no disrespect. Intimacy and the spontaneous platform when one's heart is fully pure. And until our heart becomes fully pure, like with deity worship, we don't worship Radha Krishna as Radha Krishna, worshipped in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. That's with respect, with awe and reverence, because we're not qualified for that unrestricted intimacy. So in dealings with Vaishnavas or our counselors or a spiritual master, respect, because we have close dealings, which is a kind of intimacy, a great fortune. But so that great fortune, something that we really need to advance, is having association. Be very careful about this item of respect. If we lose respect, we lose everything. Without respect, we don't even have a relationship. One of my expressions is, respect is the fabric of relationships. Without it, you don't have a relationship. What to speak of intimacy? Anything else? Okay. Yes. Very well.
What makes Bhagavad Gita as it is?
The cyclic succession. Can I elaborate? You want me to elaborate? Okay. Descending as opposed to ascending. So, let's consider. You and I will become Sanskrit scholars. We'll make a nice team. We'll go get real smart in Sanskrit. And we'll go make a translation of Bhagavad Gita together that we can both agree on. This is Bhagavad Gita. That's Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. Because Bhagavad Gita isn't understood by ascending knowledge. But Bhagavad Gita as it is, let's make a commitment to one another. Let's really become really grounded in Bhagavad Gita. So how are we going to do that? We'll go to where that Bhagavad Gita has been very carefully passed down, unchanged, as it is means unchanged, through time, unchanged. That's like a miracle. Unchanged through time, because the persons who are passing it have very, very, very meticulously not changed anything. Not added something, not deleted something. According to time and circumstance, perhaps explained it, but the text is unchanged. The meaning is unchanged. That's as it is, the cyclic succession.
It's unchanged because the ones narrating it were tools as the knife for cutting. but it's a text, you know. My understanding was that as it is, it's about the explanations.
Mm. It's both. There's the actual words, and then what's the import or the meaning of those words? That's the explanation of the commentary. So, Bhagavad Gita as it is, because when within the commentary, it's not, you know, it's not ascending. When Krishna says this, he means blah blah. When Krishna says that, he means something. But rather, the commentary is from other scriptural references, when we can know Krishna speaking this, here's another scriptural reference that helps us understand this is what it means. It's like John Lennon. There's a recorded thing of John Lennon and his estate. He invited Prabhupada to come and spend a week, or actually invited him to spend a month. And Prabhupada left after a few days because it was so uncomfortable. But there, some of those dialogues between them are recorded, and John Lennon was asking, I accept Bhagavad Gita, but what makes your rendering of Bhagavad Gita the one that I should accept? The commentary part or the explanation part. And many, many things were said, but one of the things that Prabhupada responded, he turned it back upon him and said, "It's if you could find a person, this is Bhagavad Gita as Krishna speaking, as you presented it, and if you want to know what does Krishna mean, find somebody that they're completely absorbed in Krishna. Their life is Krishna. They think nothing about Krishna, but then Krishna. They are with Krishna. Their whole life is Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. That person's going to know. It's just like, you know, supposing, another example that Prabhupada gives, supposing somebody wants to know you, and you said something, what did he mean when he said that something? Somebody that intimately knows you, they'll know what you meant when you said something. And somebody that doesn't know you, as a person, you know, intimately, not likely are they going to necessarily understand what you meant when you said something. That intimate knowledge is necessary. Prabhupada gave this example of a book named Sajahan, that was a very famous book at some point in time. I don't know what it is, but maybe some other people here do. And there were a lot, it was such a deep, kind of mind-bending book that a lot of people wrote about what's the meaning of Sajahan. And one of the questions was why the title Sajahan, because it's only mentioned the beginning and the rest is about another character. So Prabhupada's explanation was, you ask the author why he named it Sajahan, and he'll tell you. And he gave the explanation, you know, this is what the author said why he named it Sajahan, because it's a particular message he wanted to convey through the book and thus the title. Although Sajahan seems like an inconsequential person in the whole big novel. So ask Krishna. So who has that capacity to go ask Krishna? So disciplic succession means one who has heard directly from Krishna. Like Arjuna is asking Krishna, what do you mean? You said this and then you said that, seems contradictory. What? How do I understand this? Or Uddhava. Uddhava received knowledge directly from Krishna. So we can read about that. That's the dialogue. What's the meaning? Well, ask Uddhava. Well, Maitreya asked Uddhava. And then Vidura asked Maitreya. And so on. So in that line of disciplic succession, you can know, one who knows Krishna intimately, what did Krishna mean? I may not know the author of Sajahan, but someone that does, or asked him, what did you mean? That's the meaning. That's how disciplic succession works. And someone might say, oh, yuck. No. That's just your sentiment. It's your faith, okay. But going the other direction is that you can't neutralize faith. If you don't have faith in that, you're going to have faith in something else. Faith is intrinsic to the soul. So where do we choose to repose our faith? Is it possible? There was a discussion I had the other on Thursday with one of the students. Is it possible that someone can have that relationship with the Supreme in a very intimate way? You want to say, no, it's not possible, okay. But is it possible? And if it is possible, then that's a person that you'd want to hear from. His thing was, you don't need books. Because books are written by fallible people. So any book is going to be fallible. So you don't need books. So that's a faith. And is it possible that there are persons who have attained the state of infallible or perfection? We just read it last night in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says people can attain perfection. If not, then, you know, why are you wasting your time telling me I don't need a book? It's like Prabhupada's comment, I forget which fellow from India was traveling around saying, you don't need a teacher. Huh? Krishnamurti. Here's my teaching. You don't need a teacher. If you don't need a teacher, then why are you teaching? You know, get off the stage. Stop writing books. Anyway, it gets circular. Is it possible to achieve perfection? Is there such a stage where one is beyond the defects of a conditioned soul? Hear from that person who has achieved that because they're in direct contact with Krishna, or one who is in direct contact with Krishna, or one who is in contact with one who is in contact with one who is in contact with Krishna through disciplic succession.
Didn't he know this simple fact that by coming to teachings that there's no teaching is a contradiction? If he knew, why did he do that?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him. Or another answer is Bhaktisiddhanta's answer, which is, in this world there are two categories of people, the cheaters and the cheated. So he's taking one of those two positions. Because he's of this world. He could be, you know, honest and say, I don't know. But he's not being honest. He's, you know, how can you make a living that way? Going around professing, I don't know. But be dishonest and say, you don't need a teacher. Please follow my teaching. I think he said, don't follow my teaching. Here's my teaching. You don't need a teacher. Okay, I'll follow that. I need a teacher. And you're not one of them.
That's exactly what Radhana Swami was saying in his book.
Uh-huh.
That was his conclusion.
Okay. That's a good note to end on. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
His Holiness Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.